cliffcentral.com.
Farnell Mbali is here. He's arrived. So we've only got a little bit of time, but I do think it would be worth hearing just a bit about him. His book is called In Transit, which has just come out now. And there's plenty of interesting stuff in here. How are you, Farnell? Nice to meet you.
Very good to see you, man. Yeah, good to have you here. Come and sit down. Take a load off. I hope you settled into that chair comfortably. Are they looking after you out there? They offered you something to drink?
They're offering me coffee without sugar.
Oh, we don't have sugar?
No. It's me that said
no. Come here,
no.
Bashida. I need to hear what's going on. Go to Ben's microphone. What's happening?
Ask him if he's going to take milk or no milk.
Well, ask him. You don't have to be shy about these things. Milk or no milk?
Milk, no sugar.
Right. Milk, no sugar.
There we go. Yeah. Yeah, we can do that for you. No problem. How are you?
I'm better than...
Were you stuck in traffic?
Very much so. About an
I'm
hour.
I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry. I know, because we were hoping you'd be here earlier. I've been looking through your book.
I left at 7 o'clock, you know, from Northgate. But I nearly entered Pretoria, according to the GPS, before it turned me around.
So, in other words, Herman Mashaba doesn't know how to run the city. Clearly, it's a disaster, right?
A very bad one.
All right, Farnell, you've written a book. Now, let me just let everybody know who you are, because you've actually got a fascinating history here. And I always think that there are so many unsung heroes of the struggle. I'm going to call you a hero, even if you don't like to be called these things, because your story is incredible. You were born in a little village, Ekolweni, right?
That's correct.
In the Eastern Cape.
Yes.
You joined the ANC underground. You were part of the first group of students to be sent abroad to study.
That's correct.
So the exiles, the ones they wanted to become the Brains Trust.
They thought that we would come back to a free South Africa and enter the civil service. We were short of people like that among the blacks of South Africa.
Correct. And they wanted to have an educated group of people who could then take the country forward once the ANC was in government.
That's very correct.
So there was a lot of planning that went on, because, you know, there are people who think, for example, that a lot of things just happened by accident. There was a huge amount of planning. There was some real thinking that went into the strategy of what the ANC would want to achieve should they have been able to bring about democracy, which then did happen. And a lot of the plans went exactly right, and a lot of them went awry. But you were one of a small group of people then that were sent outside of the country to study. You were also in Umkhonto weSizwe, right?
That's correct. I joined Umkhonto weSizwe when I was already in exile. 1967, I joined.
And where were you exiled to? Were you sent to the Soviet Union?
When we left South Africa, we were going to study in the Soviet Union, which we did. But after finishing, there was no way of coming back to South Africa, because the leadership people, you know, the Rivonia trial had taken place, and yeah, the leadership, you know, there was no leadership inside. We were very far from home, and there was no way of seeing how we could get back.
So, Farnell, what happens? Are you trapped in Russia? I mean,
we're not exactly trapped in Russia, because after finishing studies, we remained there for something like 3 months without knowing where to go.
Wow.
Then we decided to go to Tanzania, Dar es Salaam. But we didn't have the proper papers, you know, and so on. But finally, some of us, one, me, together another guy, we agreed that I should go to Dar es Salaam to ask for permission to join Umkhonto weSizwe. I traveled from Moscow to Dar es Salaam, got the permission, and went back to Moscow now for military training.
This must have been, as much as it was a very scary thing for you as a young man, it must have been very exciting to be part of this movement, to be part of a group of people who were going to bring about change. As many obstacles as were put in your way, there must have been a sense of adventure to this too, despite the dangers, right?
It was not at all scary. Actually, this is what we wanted to do, except that we were being prevented in order for us, since we're already from Fort Hare, from university, mm-hmm, not to go in that direction, but to take the academic,
the line of studying and becoming...
The line of study, right. Yes. That was them. saying no to us. But now when we got the chance to join, that's what we did.
I believe you worked alongside Moses Mabhida, a name that we know well in terms of his contribution to the struggle, Yusuf Dadu as well. And you were involved quite intimately with them in planning certain parts of what was then the resistance, effectively, the armed resistance. Can you tell us a little bit about that? Because you do cover it in your book.
I was not actually in the planning per se, but I was on the military side, acting as sometimes commander, sometimes commissar, executing whatever was given to me to handle by the Revolutionary Council, which was led by people like John Slovo, Moses Mabhida, Yusuf Dadu. I was actually closer to O.R. Tambo, where I would be called in order to execute these duties.
How closely were you working with O.R. Tambo? I mean, would you speak to him every month? Would you speak to him every day? Would you only communicate via secret correspondence once a year? Because we know how difficult it was to maintain communications.
Oh, we were very close. There was actually a point, I don't remember how long the time was, when we lived in the same house. They were chosen 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 of us to go and live with them in that house, you know. Because I think things were not very, very safe for him at that point in time in Lusaka. Our duty was actually to secure him.
Ah, okay. So was he a difficult man to look after? I mean, he seems to have been a very, very smart and connected individual who really was... he was the overall strategic planner for the ANC at that point. Surely it must have been complicated to have had to be his minder, to have had to look after his security at this stage, because he was such a target, first of all. Second of all, he would have been seeing people all the time. He would have been in and out of meetings. He would have been planning a lot of the activities of the ANC from exile. What kind of complications were involved in looking after a man like this?
O.R. Tambo was a very busy person. During the day, you would hardly see him. You would leave in the morning and come back in the evening, you know, with the driver, you know, but during the night, we were there to secure the premises and make sure that nothing untoward happened. He was a very, very friendly person. Actually, I must say, my first lessons in driving I was given by O.R. Tambo.
Wow.
We were close in the sense also that, you know, when you are in Zambia, in Lusaka, at that time, we were not legitimately there as Mkhonto we Sizwe or even the ANC. People who were there legitimately were the people of ZAPU.
Right.
But they took us under wing secretly, privately. No noise was made about it. And sometimes we would become too many in the capital of Lusaka. And there would be now this request, O.R. wanted us to go and live in the bush. And some people, you know, would not like to go and live in the bush. It's hard there, you know.
Sure.
But he would come along and live with us in the bush. To the extent that actually a small little, there was a stream.
Yeah.
And there was where water had dammed into a pool where we used to swim. And we used to swim with O.R.
This is an incredible life experience, because he and his reputation now since his passing, obviously he's become a man of some legend and mythology, you know, around his contribution to the struggle. But clearly for you, he was just at that point a friend, a mentor in some way.
Definitely it was so. Yes.
It must be quite extraordinary.
You could sit down and chat with O.R. during that time when he had some 10-15 minutes to talk about...
What would you talk about?
Ordinary things. I remember, for instance, you know, I've just told you that my first lessons in driving were, yes, by him. He also taught me how to cook umphokoqo, which you do not know what it means.
No, tell me what that is.
Umphokoqo is a Xhosa word for powdery stiff pap. You know, it's very powdery. You know, it's cooked like that, and then it is ate with sour milk.
Uh-huh.
He liked that, and because I wasn't sure how to prepare it and serve it, he was the one who coached me how to, and then from there, no problem.
So you learned to drive and to cook from Oliver Tambo.
To cook that particular dish. That particular dish.
That's unbelievable. Were there ever any occasions where you were, where he was in danger and you all had to protect him? Were there occasions where you found yourself in danger in Zambia in particular?
No, there were none such. There were none such.
So in other words, the
nothing ever happened, but, you know, we're always around, you know, to make sure that if anything came near, we saw what it was and how to deal with it.
Now, you taught economics, economic history, development economics at the University of the Transkei, right?
Yes.
And you were also the head of department. You established a local branch of the National Tertiary Education Staff Union. So, I mean, education's always been an important part of your life.
Yes, I did my university education at Fort Hare, majoring in English and in politics. Then, secured for myself a teacher certificate. Then we left. That was 1962. Early we left for further studies in the Soviet Union. Now that was 4 years at Fort Hare, and when we got to the Soviet Union, there we were faced with another 4 years of university study, and when we finished, we went and joined Umkhonto weSizwe, and then we were reading books as well. There we were very tired by then.
But I mean, at the same time, you've got this interesting mix, because for some people it was a choice. Either you would just study or you would go into Umkhonto, right? You had both.
Yes.
I mean, you had the studying part of all of this in exile.
Yes.
And you had to come back and prepare for a role in what could have been armed conflict a lot of the time.
We were prepared for that.
Sure.
Yes.
Now, what happened with you and with many of the other, at that stage, veterans, I suppose, when things started to change, when Mandela was released from prison, when 1990 the ANC were unbanned, when 1994 we had our elections, were you earmarked for a role in the bureaucracy and the cabinet and the government? I mean, were you ever told this is what we need to deploy you into?
When Mandela was released, I was still in Australia in 1990. I had undertaken a study in economics, now in development studies this time. Mm-hmm. I was doing my master's there, and I finished in 1990. 1990, I had to go back to Lusaka because it was not still, things were not ready for me to return to South Africa. And when I came back, of course, while I was in Lusaka, I applied. There was an advertisement, and I applied according to that to two places, to Fort Hare and to the University of Transkei.
Mm-hmm.
The University of Transkei called me for an interview. That's how I came back and then started teaching at the University of Transkei.
But they didn't say to you, we need you in government, which was the main reason that they sent you overseas to study in the first place, is so that they would have people who had the requisite knowledge to be able to take up duties once government had been established. And they never put you to that work.
No, that did not happen.
Was that difficult to deal with? Because I'd imagine this is something that you had almost dedicated your life to at this stage.
Although it was meant to be like that, all the time that we were serving in the struggle, we never thought about that role, that it was our given future role to play. No, we did not. And when it did not, we were not called. Some of us were called, of course, and I had my own qualifications. I felt no need that I should go and do this or that. I wasn't saying to myself, I have this choice, it is my right. No, I just simply went and did what was in my hands.
That's interesting, because there are a lot of people who came out of the struggle and felt that they were owed a position in government, that they were owed some kind of job description by the party, by the movement. And your opinion is different, that you had usefulness elsewhere as well.
I don't blame 100% people like that, because you would find that people who have got those expectations are presently insecure, right? I mean, look, I had my qualifications. Let me give you an example. We came from the universities, as I've told you, and we joined Umkhonto weSizwe. Among our own people who were in the camps, they did not trust why we were there, because they thought, now these are people, they used to say, intellectuals, what? You are coming here to take our jobs and what have you in the future, and so on. Of course, that was not the case, but there is that fear among people, knowing that this is the only way that they can live on. They've been in training for so many years, they've been fighting for so many, now they are back and they've got nothing to do.
Right. And for many MK veterans, that was the reality.
That was the reality, yes.
But isn't it interesting, Fanele, when you look at how we've developed in the last 22 odd years as a nation, and how the ANC has changed, and how even Umkhonto weSizwe veterans have viewed a lot of these changes. There are people who don't like the intellectuals, the few that remain in the ANC, that consider those people to perhaps be part of the problem rather than part of the solution. Do you know what I mean? Do you feel that there's that going on? Or is that a misconception?
No, I don't feel so at all. Never mind the fact that is in the book where I relate the story when I was in Tete in Mozambique, and I am sometimes when we are relaxing, we are talking among ourselves, commanders, commissars, and discussing, and then you find that because people have come to know that this guy is a university graduate, they mistrust. They think that I might change sides. Why am I here? Why am I not in a better place and so on, right? Mm-hmm. And of course, even in the book, I do intimate from the book of Lenin, where he says that there are classes, and he mentions them. And when it comes to the class of the middle class, the intellectuals are there, and the one class that has got to be trusted is the working class. All the others are not going to be true to the revolution, because they have got some things that they can. The peasant, for instance, they got a small backyard garden and is looking after, is not going to give up. An intellectual is gone, has got some intellectual property. Mm-hmm. What do you call it? Yeah. So these people are not going to very fully take to the revolution. It's only the working class.
Do you think Lenin's those ideas of his are still valid now?
Yes, I think so. And yes, I do.
Do you think that the current administration trusts the working class?
What do you mean? Okay, I'm not sure about trusting, whether you are referring to a situation where the working class might feel that they might be, you know, dumped by the intelligentsia or what? Is that what you mean?
Well, you know, but a lot of people say, for example, that when Thabo Mbeki's administration went out, a lot of the intellectual capital of the movement was dissipated. That now we have a lot of ideologues and a lot of people who are perhaps in networks of patronage and all the rest that are not necessarily the thinkers, the people that put the ANC together, the intellectual descendants of O.R. Tambo, for example, that a lot of that has been wasted.
There is another angle to this kind of discussion. We should, of course, we can't exhaust it right away. Lenin posits the fact that even though the working class are the most revolutionary, but yet at the same time, it is the intelligentsia who will always be in a position to size up the situation, to know the conditions, and then point the direction of the revolution, which now, of course, will be taken. They are both are necessary to each other.
I wonder in South Africa now who really controls our destiny. Is it the intelligentsia? Is it the bourgeoisie? Is it the working class? What would Lenin make of our current situation?
Well, I don't know what he would make of it. I'm not Lenin, but according to me, where we are right now is a space where we aren't what we thought we would become. Because we thought we would take the socialist path, mm-hmm. to, and then as far as I am concerned, of course, I mean, look, that did not happen. It doesn't happen. I don't know in the future the parties like the EFF. I'm not sure where they actually stand about that. Uh-huh. But where we are right now, we are in capitalism.
Yeah,
we are in capitalism, and of course we. In democracy, which does not allow the picking up of arms and fighting one another and so on, we are in a democracy where we vote for things. And I'm not sure how things are going to turn out now. Look where the ANC is right now. Its power and confidence, they are low at the present moment. But that does not mean that they are not going to turn round. I still have got a belief that we are going to turn round.
In truth, the ANC are in transit. That's also the title of your book. I mean, there's a lot of irony in this. In Transit is the autobiography of a South African freedom fighter, Fanele Mbali. I'm sorry we've run out of time. I know you were stuck in traffic. I really appreciate you coming through this morning.
Thank you.
And thank you for talking to us. Get the book. It's called In Transit if you want to hear more about this fascinating story and stories like yours that are not the most well-known, most famous stories of the struggle are sometimes even more interesting because there are little anecdotal things that you may learn about people who you thought you knew.
Yes, I'm glad you put it that way. But I also wish that more and more of us who have gone through this experience
would share them.
Yes, please.
Well, I'm glad you have. Thank you very much.
Thank you,
Fanele. What a pleasure to meet you. Fanele Mbali, and get the book. It's called In Transit. CliffCentral.com